Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, good morning and welcome to episode 221 of Hobby Hotline this morning on Bench Clear Media. Joined today by Logan King NASCAR and Dr. James Beckett, who my friend always says needs no introduction, but I'm going to figure one out one day. Logan, I have said off air, I'm going to start the show with this. I am tired of seeing you on the top of the registry when I add a car. Okay. I log onto my app and I spend more time with you than I do with my children with that King NASCAR staring at you. So once again, if people don't know, PSA Hall of Famer and an honor to be on with the two of you today.
Yeah. Great to be here.
Yeah. So we got some chat starting already this morning. Did you watch the Pro Bowl? I don't think they have a Pro Bowl anymore. I think they have a flag football skills competition with the Ravens backup quarterback. Chasing Majors. I logged to check to see my video upload and found this premiere. Welcome. Hope you enjoy it. Mad City Brew. Morning to the card collectors. I guess we are the card collectors. Sounds like a rough gang in, you know, West Side Story.
West Side Story.
was that too old of a reference? How about Reservoir Dog? You know, I'll come up with more current. So want to thank everybody for joining us. And please, the link is going to be at the bottom. Feel free to join us. I will put that in the chat as well. Anyone see the joke of the NHL skills competition? No, I was watching the NFL Pro Bowl. How about you guys?
I didn't see the Pro Bowl at all. yeah, I had no interest in watching flag football.
Dr. Jim, good morning. Do you watch any of these exhibitions?
I actually played a lot of flag football back in city leagues, back when I was a young professor. And, you know, I think what I played is rougher than what they were doing.
Yeah.
Nobody was worried about me getting injured.
Well, your guaranteed contract was might have been a little bit different than some of these guys. They're talking about Lamar Jackson in Baltimore right now, maybe getting $250 million guaranteed. So maybe flag football is the way to go for them. Hockey, on the other hand, has been doing skills forever.
Lamar Jackson's worth $250 million in flag football.
Well, in flag football, at least. He can play like every position.
I'm saying, yeah.
good morning, Michael. So I think that it's kind of a fun time of year because you obviously you've got the All-Star Games, kind of a break in the schedule. But to me, it also kind of signals we're starting to turn the corner. I don't care about the groundhog. I kind of like judging things on the sports card world, and that means that we have a Topps flagship designs coming out and Topps flagship being released soon. Do you guys still buy flagship products in general for any sports?
I do. You know, I buy, you know, flagship F1, you know, flagship, you know, NASCAR, just whatever. You know, I do buy it.
Do you buy, Dr. Jim, the flagships or not anymore?
Sometimes when I buy this big group of blasters and things like that, there'll be a lot of flagship in there, and it's kind of fun to go through it. But I'm past the days of completing sets one card at a time. So I just pick out the players I like.
Good morning, gang. Fly, Eagles, fly. Yes, congratulations, Philly and Kansas City fans. We will definitely touch on the Super Bowl. But let's take a look at the flagship product, because I am not always a complimentary aesthetic person, but I kind of like this look this year. Sorry to cut you off there, guys, but that's the promo of the Adley Rutschman, and it's a clean look. To me, it harks a little bit back to, you know, 83, 84 with that picture down at the bottom, but I like the large unfeathered photograph at the top and then everything at the bottom. The cup's not at the top. The rookie symbol's not at the top. They kind of give that clear photo, but they do jam a lot of information at the bottom there. What do you guys think of the look of the card?
I like it. I think it's aesthetically pleasing. And I'm like you, Danny. I think that having everything at the bottom of the card is nice. The rookie card logo looks good, and of course they got the Topps rookie cup, so for the rookie cup contenders. So, yep. So I think it's very nice. And what about the backs? Has anybody seen the backs? Because I got to have big numbers. I'm old.
Logan, as I try to read the comments today, you'll see I agree with you. Yes, I am typically very critical of flagship designs each year. I absolutely love this year's design. We all agree, Bo. Well, I shouldn't say that. I think we're... Dr. Beckett, do you like the design aesthetically?
Well, the only thing I would point out is that there's an awful big Orioles birdie down at the bottom there. But just for reference, when these cards are licensed, they're licensed pretty much equally in royalties by the Players Association and the leagues, the teams. And so for the teams to be prominently displayed on the card is part of Major League Baseball's desire to tout their brand, not just the player, but the teams the player plays for. But it was a little big for me. Could have been a tiny birdie sitting on his shoulder, perhaps.
Well, you know what? To your point, they actually tried to adjust it a little bit and maybe didn't go far enough. So the original design, I think they kind of made a mistake. It's a little bit hard to see, but on the left here, Adley Rutschman's face actually covers the team name and the bird gets blocked. So they did make a subtle adjustment, but now I find it almost a little hard to read the team name over there, but Dr. Beckett, you are right.
I'm just talking about the real estate dedicated to a logo of a team, a mascot, kind of it's the same thing that's on the cap pretty much, I think. And so I'm saying I think that's why it's there, because those are the marks that Major League Baseball wants to make sure that we're seeing those.
And I was going to say, to your point, they've kept it like 25% of the card no matter what, even when they changed the font. It seems like that portion of the card didn't change the total real estate. It was just within that real estate that they played around with stuff. So, but I think it's a good looking card. And let's catch up with some comments here. The baseball rookie card list in Series 1 may be great. It may be. As somebody who's been chasing and following rookies for 30 years, every rookie checklist may be great. And we'll find out in a couple of years.
Can we address the Mo Bamba?
Oh, absolutely. They named a dance after him.
La Bamba. Eric, my point was going to be, anytime somebody's in the news, and again, to take it back to the Pro Bowl and the NHL skills, anybody that's highly skilled, even if they're not an all-pro, now maybe Mo Bamba's skill is throwing punches or wrestling or whatever. He's one of the biggest dudes around, and he can supposedly hit from outside when nobody's looking. But just to be in the public eye, is that better than being an all-pro? To be the fastest skater in the NHL, does that have a following if you're not one of the best players? I think being highly skilled is, or being in the news is maybe not equally as good, but it's legitimately contributes to the value and the demand for the card.
You're saying that the skills competition helps the value equal to the fight? Am I understanding?
No, I'm saying that the winners of the dunk contests, they get a little bit of a bump.
Yes.
The fast Al McGinnis, who had the fastest slap shot, back 20 or 30 years ago,
absolutely.
There's a little bit of a following just for somebody that's highly skilled. So Mo Bamba, I had not to this point figured out what his skill was.
I got you. Well, that would be quite a skills competition if they had that at the NBA All-Star.
A fight.
Yes.
Yeah. Ultimate fighting. Yeah.
Right. We got a cross promotion here. We can do a UFC NBA cross release. But no, that's a good point. This goes back to the old, just, and I'm going to direct this to you, Dr. Beckett. In media and press, is any press good press?
No.
Not anymore.
The last few years, you can see there's certain kinds of bad press that get you kicked out of the league.
Mm-hmm. Well, fair enough.
Your card values are going to have trouble.
Let me take a step back.
We'll take you.
Okay. Within legal, moral, ethical lines that allow us to stay in society, within that realm, I still think that a lot of this news gives these guys temporary bumps, even if it's for a day or two.
But Danny, there's not a clear line there, because these are, if you're innocent until proven guilty, many of these individuals have not been convicted. They have not been convicted, and they get suspended based on the accusation. And I'm not saying they're innocent. They may be completely guilty, but they don't get a chance anymore. The public opinion is, if you have that person on your team, there's something wrong with you. And the sponsors or the fans say we're not happy about that.
Now, I wonder if that's changed, because there was that famous play where there was a double play broken up at second base. I think it was Hal McCray going into Willie Randolph, where he let's say he doesn't quite slide as much as he really just takes him out into left field, and that was considered a clean play at the time. And I wonder if that were to happen today, forget the punishment on the field, but would fans like that? Would that actually help Hal McCray get street cred, for lack of a better term? Logan, is there some of that with athletes, getting some street cred?
You know, these days, you know, I don't know that would fly as well. I think there'd be a lot, you know, with social media and everything, there'd be a lot of criticism, a lot of uproar, I think. That's just my opinion.
Well, you go back to Pete Rose with Ray Fosse, you know.
Oh, gosh.
If Willie Randolph had been an absolute superstar, you know, but again, not to choose sides or anything, but when Joseph Osai gave Patrick Mahomes more than a gentle push when he was 90% out of bounds, if Mahomes is not a superstar who's injured, I don't know that that gets called the same way. So I think there's certainly a protection of superstars. And Willie Randolph, you know, you turn the clock back. If he's a superstar, and Hal McCray, who was a little bit of a football player too, takes him out, he's in deep trouble. Not just a fine. He may be persona non grata, and not nobody would want him on your team. On the other hand, Pete Rose totally smashed Ray Fosse and walked away, and kind of, I don't know that he taunted, but he was feeling good that he'd made the play. Hard-nosed football, baseball.
Well, that's what people said. They said hard-nosed play.
It's different. Taking that out of the game.
Well, and there's a lot of people in the chats talking about a lot of people doing stuff off the field. None of this conversation is about off the field. If I didn't make that clear twice now, I am. Okay. We're talking about on the field issues. I certainly don't think that any of these crimes off the field are reasons to put guys on the cards. I'm not suggesting in any way for Joe Mixon or Trevor Bauer or any of the comments.
But it's not good for their card value.
Well, no. But at that point, they're off my radar. Yeah.
The notoriety of didn't Hal McCray win a batting title, or did he?
Hal McCray was a decent player. He was an all-star. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a big guy.
Yeah.
Now Josh Hamilton's an interesting one, but that was a different story. He had, talk about an up and down career with him. He had probably the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows on card prices. But a lot of people also talking about, you know, the Topps design, and talking about the rookie checklist, and talking about in the news. Well, so in the news right now, we've got the end of free agency. We've got all these top 100 lists and all these prospects coming out. As a general sense, what do you guys think about investing in prospects? Because people this time of year are buying up at crazy prices, a lot of the Bowman first. I like to dabble, but I can't even afford some of these players. That are coming out, and their base autographs are starting at $50, $100, $200. Is that too much for people to enter the market at?
I think it is. I've never really been much of a prospect guy. I mean, I do a little bit, but some of those prices, it's getting a little absurd. And some of these price points, entry points are, I think it's kind of getting out of hand. That's just my opinion.
Danny, there's two ways to invest. One is to be buying things, and the other is what I do, is to not sell things. So in effect, if I get a product and I break the product and there's some untested but highly touted rookies, I'm in effect investing by not putting them out there, by holding them back, by retaining them, because I'm thinking, I want to see how this plays out. So in effect, I mean, so I bought them, but I bought them within the box or the case or whatever I got. And so that's another way to think of it. I didn't have to go out and buy it, but if I could have sold it for more right away, should I do that? I think there's an incubation period that's longer for baseball than it is for the other sports. That if somebody's 21 years old or 22 years old, you maybe need to not sell guys until they hit 25.
Well, and that's the question, in baseball, is the learning curve at every level takes a couple hundred at bats. So when a guy hits the majors, if he doesn't, take off like a rocket booster, his prices fall so quickly.
Yeah, but I'm guessing that because I'm holding. So I don't have to do the homework. I get to do the homework in arrears when they hit 25. I think, okay, now what has that person done? If it's not much, then I shouldn't have held. If they've gone on to really be a big-time player, then I can consider that there. But to do it right out of the gate, Danny, that's the problem because the information is just opinions.
And that's what drives a lot of the top 100 list. And this is to my point is, you know, a guy who was drafted in June of last year is really hard to spend $250, $300 off, you know, 16 plate appearances at single A last year. And listen, it might be one of, you know, Jackson Holiday, number one pick. I'm an Oriole fan. My son's won a Jackson Holiday card. I know I'm either buying a base card that's really never going to appreciate, which is fine, you know, or I'm really priced out of the Jackson Holiday market. And you know,
if it's a base card, it's never going to be as valuable. But if a guy gets on fire, his base cards will not go up as much, but the base cards will be in demand of the very top player of their rookie cards. Their base rookie is not it's their easiest rookie card, and nobody's going to get ooh and odd about it. But so I don't know that your son is so sophisticated that he's figured out that if it's a base card, it's dad doesn't love me anymore.
No, he was sophisticated enough to negotiate into a Trevor Lawrence. So maybe his Oriole loyalty is less than I want it to be. The average male athlete peak is 27, I believe. I have no idea if that's scientifically accurate, but I think the point is that you can't judge people too young, and that's to Dr. Beckett's point of sitting on them.
But again, there's two kinds of judging, Danny and Logan. You know, basically, you've got the sabermetricians, you've got the metric people that are doing all these advanced analytics for projecting, and then you got the scouts, the old time scouts. There's still some of them out there that just recognize raw talent that's hard to quantify. And so when you get these top 100 lists, my guess is it's more toward the analytics. But, you know, there's some intangibles there. And that's why it can never be an exact science.
So, Logan, let me ask you, because I called you up and I said, and this was probably almost a year ago, I said, tell me about this Haley Deegan. And then I found out I can't afford Haley Deegan. What is the growth and price curve like for racing?
It's very slow, especially on the NASCAR side. Now, of course, Formula One's seen an exponential growth, of course, but you know, on the NASCAR side, it's very slow and steady. And I think that's what Dr. Beckett likes, is slow and steady. Instead of just getting, you know, a huge bump and going from $100 to $1,000, I'd like to see it go $100, $110, and just increment up. But as far as Haley Deegan, I mean, she's still kind of unproven. She's been in the lower series, and she's still working her way up to the top, but her cards do command, as far as NASCAR is concerned, a pretty decent price. I mean, her rookie cards, I saw one sell the other day, a PSA 10, it was like around $100. I mean, so they're still affordable.
Her attractiveness is not unproven.
It's
a dominated industry.
There's a gem mint there. Yeah. But Logan, who else should I be looking out for? Or who else should people be looking for? If Haley's not the one and she's getting the attention for the looks, who are the young drivers?
Well, you've got a couple young drivers this year. I mean, if you're going to speculate on any NASCAR, of course, there's Ty Gibbs. He's the son of Joe Gibbs. Grandson of Joe Gibbs. You've also got a guy who's running for Richard Petty, and his name is Noah Gregson. So those are the who I would think this year are going to be the two hotter drivers, because they're making their cup debuts this year.
And remember, you can watch this back and write down those names again for Logan's guaranteeing you for the next year.
You're going to have a guaranteed return.
Hey, Danny, can we address Double D Vintage's comment about the I'm a believer in selling all the RCs when you
open them? Yeah, let me put that back on.
This is the version, the same version of the, not battle, but the different that Rich Klein and I have about when you buy a collection, do you sell the best stuff first or do you sell the best stuff last? I'm a sell the best stuff last person. Double D is saying, I want to get my money back out of the stuff I can sell right now. And that's what Rich does. Rich buys a collection. He sells the easy sellers first and then goes slower with the other stuff. I sell the, well, I'm just saying there's the two approaches. So I do not do it the way Double D does it, but I know that many people do.
But I'll say that I think there's a difference between modern and vintage in my approach. On a modern card, if I'm dealing with a rookie or a minor league player, I may want to get rid of that card if I'm worried about getting returned back on the purchase. If it's vintage, it might be a whole different ballgame, no pun intended, because there's a little bit more stability in where that where the liquidity might come from.
Yeah, but I do it both. I do it for modern and for vintage. When I'm consistent. I think Richie is pretty much too when he's buying things, although he's actually on the buying mode again now after he sold out. So
Well then you and I will politely disagree that I will take one approach on vintage and one on modern. But and to be fair, the modern rookies I am a little bit more conservative. I love investing in them, but I probably sell early rather than late on a lot of these guys.
Well, we're all lifers, and so if you don't have a short-term horizon, then I kind of feel like the hobby is going to be bigger in 3 years than it is now. And that some of these players, I don't know which ones are going to be no good, but some of them are going to be good. And so in believing that the hobby is going to be bigger and better and stronger in 3 years, then my buy and hold of the things that I think have potential for going up is that's the reason behind what I'm doing, because I'm a lifer. If I'm short term, well, oh my goodness, I wouldn't even be wanting to hold on to vintage.
Yeah. And that's an excellent point. Logan, I know because of what I was yanking your chain on at the beginning that you do hold on to a lot of your cards. Mm-hmm. But I also know that you are constantly active in modern as well. So what's your general approach for holding versus selling?
I hold everything. I'm not a seller right now. I mean, maybe in a few years when I decide to retire, maybe that's what I spend my retirement doing, is selling cards, maybe. But I've never been a seller. I mean, you can go look at my eBay profile and you can see that I'm a pure buyer. Always have been. I've been doing it for, you know, over 50 years. It's hard for me to let go, I guess. I don't know. It's weird too. And I'll make this comment too. This may be too much information, but even when people send me cards in the mail and they use other cards, you know, to pad those cards, you know, and they're common cards, I keep all those too. I don't get rid of any of those. I feel like I'm doing something bad if I throw away a trading card.
This is one I got yesterday. I'm embarrassed to agree with you. Absolutely was used to pack a card, and I
don't throw them away. I keep every single one of them.
I'm not gonna lie. It was a Allen and Ginter 66 Frank Robinson throwback by coincidence, and I don't know that I can physically throw away Frank Robinson's Triple Crown, but that's a separate emotional issue I'll deal with my therapist. F1 popularity is going to be around for a long time, in my opinion. The amount of celebrities spotted at F1 events might be more than any other sport. Logan, educate us on how big it actually is and has been for a while and where we're headed.
Well, F1's a global phenomenon. I mean, it's been around since, I think, 1954, maybe, I think is when F1 officially, you know, was sanctioned. But, you know, it's going to be around for a long time. And it's been around a long time before people took notice of it during the pandemic. Now, I think you're going to see the prices actually get to where they should be as far as, you know, not these pie in the sky, I'm going to make a gazillion dollar prices, but more, you know, they're going to get more normal, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. You know, I have found a lot of good deals here lately on F1. I can actually start to afford to collect some of the modern stuff because the prices have come down so much. So as a collector, I'm happy about that. But yeah, it's going to be around for a long time. I think the popularity right now is probably at a peak because the United States has got three races this coming season. I think it's Miami, down at Austin, Texas, and then Las Vegas. So, I mean, used to be that, you know, we had one United States Grand Prix and you might get 30-40% attendance. Now it's like, you know, 400,000 people are going to a race weekend at Austin, Texas. So the popularity is there. If it stays, that's great. I'm happy for that because, you know, I love all forms of racing, not just NASCAR. I just, you know, my primary focus for collecting is NASCAR, but I'm glad to see it. And I think it's going to be around for a while.
F1 is the third most popular sport in the world, I think. It's, I think soccer's number one and cricket's number two and F1 is number three. And so what you had last year, whatever that was, I think a year and a half ago when the F1 stuff came out, they were all these cumulative rookie cards. Mm-hmm. And that's a one-off. So now these products are going to have to stand on their own merit without the gold rush of thinking these are all going to be rookies. Everything's going to be golden inside this the first packs.
Logan, the people want to know, do you collect memorabilia like vintage jackets or original posters from older races?
Oh, I've got tons of posters. I've got, as you can see behind me, you know, I've got the Dale Earnhardt Senior fire suit. I've got crew suits. I've got, it's more than just cards for me. It's a lot of memorabilia. So yes, I do collect all that stuff. I have posters, programs, tickets, pennants. I mean, you name it, I've got.
You know, one of my nightmares is, and I need to make a deal with Logan, I think, although it's probably not for sale or trade, but that card shop in Nashville, or where was it that burned down, that I heard about? I just, that's just a nightmare. But if I had a fire suit, Logan, I could keep my best cards in that fire suit.
Yeah, exactly.
I could just see you walking around in the fire suit just in case. I can see every time you buy a card, you got to do it on one knee in 3 seconds. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I could probably take my camera and pan it around here. And you, if I did that, you could see all the things that in fact, hold on. I'll just do that real quick and show people.
Yeah, please.
I mean, you can look and see all the things. There's a Richard Petty hat, by the way. See there. There's all kinds of things.
And that's fabulous. But, you know, in distinction to people that, you know, cards can be damaged by fire or water, you have a insurance-proofed item.
You do.
By water or by fire. It's like a, you know, indestructible piece of memorabilia. You know, these sneakerheads, I mean, I don't think that can be a long-term thing because the rubber degrades.
Yes.
And so you have the ultimate infinity suit.
Yeah, it's got little stones in it. Yeah, you're talking about that. My wife last night, she was telling me, she goes, I need a new pair of house slippers because the soles on the bottom of them are coming apart. So it's like what you said. This thing's great.
You know, I think they say you're not supposed to give a vacuum as a present. I think you're also not supposed to give a NASCAR suit as
fire
a present.
Suit.
Fire suit, yeah. I will say, people, Logan, I think you've opened up a live stream sales here. Sweet Core shirt. And somebody else wanted half your stuff also. Epic Room Double D. Yes, it is. Maximus. I want to use Marlboro suit, the old ones. So, Logan, do you actively still try to get memorabilia, or is it stuff that's brought to you?
No, I actively still pursue memorabilia. You know, not as much. I mean, cards are my primary focus these days. You know, there's still some vintage things that I want to get. I mean, and not just in NASCAR, there's some vintage baseball still would like to have in my collection. But my primary focus is trading cards. But there is tickets right now. Tickets are getting to be pretty hot, and I do have a lot of NASCAR tickets. I'm thinking about maybe getting slabbed.
You have such a fabulous non-card display, Logan. Well, what would it be if you went all in on memorabilia, or is it too late? Because some of that stuff you got, you know, over the years, is it too late? Because memorabilia is catching up now. People are realizing that the game used card with a little tiny swatch should not be worth more than the whole jersey.
Agreed. It is a little bit too late. Like on eBay not too long ago, I saw a crew uniform from, like, it was like the early 80s from the Uno, you know, the Uno playing card team, and it was really nice, this team suit. And I thought about buying it, and I said, well, if I can get it for $400 or $500, maybe I might get it. That thing went for like $1,500 or some kind of crazy money. So, yeah, it's too late.
Well, then, Logan, I'll do you one here, because people have asked me this question. If somebody has something laying around, what are good types of items that are worth something in NASCAR and F1? Because I know there's a lot of, as you've taught me, a lot of diecast and a lot of stuff that's not real valuable. What is good memorabilia?
Good memorabilia are things that have actually been used, like at a race, like these crew suits, fire suits, and things that were at the race, like maybe tickets, programs, pens. Pennants, things that you can get like that. You know, the little Beanie Baby cars and the knife sets that for Dale Earnhardt Sr. Now, that stuff is not any good. You don't want any of them. You want actual game use things, or things that were actually part of the event. So that's what I look for. I've got like some NASCAR pens that NASCAR made back years ago that they gave out to the drivers when you became a member of NASCAR. And they're just little bitty lapel pens, or like maybe a tie. They look like maybe a tie pin or something. But those things are hard to find. So, you know, I've been collecting those over the years, and that's the kind of stuff that I really like. You know, I don't go for that Beanie Baby NASCAR the stuff and all that. That stuff does nothing for me.
Okay. Well, King NASCAR, if you guys are sitting on something, didn't know what to do with it, reach out to Logan. And DG makes a comment. Sneaker collector investors need to wake up. Those things were not manufactured last decades. DG, that is true, but got news for you. Neither were cardboard 150 years ago. So, we're all in this game of trying to protect things, and that's what leads to scarcity. So,
You know, Danny, I'm not a chemist, but I'm just wondering, if you were to encapsulate sneakers, does that retard the degradation of the rubber, or does it speed it up when you have no air circulation?
I'm going to say I'm not an expert on this one either, but the thought is interesting. I would assume that any museum has to have standards for all substances on how to protect them. I mean, you know, rubber has been used in NASA. And that's the Smithsonian, certainly, I would think, has ways to protect that. I'm sure it's humidity levels. As a cigar smoker, I'm sure there's a proper humidity somewhere in there. But that's a great question. But I don't think I've ever seen a sneaker collection get lost to degradation yet. So they might have a couple more years before the Jordans fall apart. Race use sheet metal has value. That's good to know. And here you go, Logan. I have a fender from a Cheerios car signed by Petty. Is it worth anything?
Yeah, it sure is. It's.
I'm assuming the value is on Petty, not Cheerios.
Well, I mean, you're going to have people that collect like food things too. You never know with the Cheerios. I mean, if it was Coca-Cola or something like that, it definitely would have some extra value just because of that. But I mean, there's always value in race use sheet metal. I mean, you can still get it. There's a lot of it. In fact, a lot of the teams sell it on their website. You know, I know Hendrick does. Roush does. There's several of them that do.
Well, we took a left turn, but that was super, super educational, Logan.
Yeah, we did take a left turn.
You and I talked in advance, and we said we're not doing that. Okay, so I did want to touch on the Super Bowl, because if you have not heard, there is a Super Bowl coming up. It is set Kansas City and Philadelphia. And I want to talk about it from the perspective of what cards would be impacted the most or the least, depending on the game. The point that I was trying to make was I think Jalen Hurts' cards would go up more than Patrick Mahomes with a win.
Totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dr. Beckett, we've always said quarterbacks are the only position that has value. Does that stay the same, or would we, getting back to your comment earlier, if a wide receiver wins Super Bowl MVP, do we get that little bit of a bump?
Well, if Jalen Hurts has a great game, his card values are going to go up. Mm-hmm. If Patrick Mahomes has a great game, his cards are going to stay the same. He's already at that level. But to your point, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, those guys are the reason that Jalen Hurts, one of the reasons, that the offensive line too. But those guys are really pretty special. And even if they have huge games, I just don't think it can bump them that much. It's just a quarterback driven thing. Now that may not always be the case, but even now I think, or Miles Sanders, if he runs for 200 yards, well, Timmy Brown ran for 200 yards and nobody's heard of him in the last 30
years. Well, Logan, there's Gibbs's grandfather. See how Dr. Beckett tied that together?
Back to Big Joe.
Yeah.
There you go.
but that was, I guess, you know, it's an interesting perspective from the hobby, because you would think that a quarterback that's now won two Super Bowls, if Mahomes were to win, you know, cements a bigger legacy, a bigger dynasty, but yet somehow it doesn't really react that way. And gosh forbid he has a bad game. I mean, it's like his whole career, you know, neutralizes
it. I don't think if he has a bad game, they're going to blame it on his high ankle sprain.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. Like, his career neutralizes
up or down that much. He's a superstar. You know, the stuff he, like I said, on the skills, he has skills that the other quarterbacks don't have.
It's a shame he couldn't be in the Pro Bowl. But I do think that that's the point.
They didn't have the one-legged throwing event.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I do think the two-week gap
helps.
Is unique in football, and because of what their bodies go through, I think it's a huge help for Mahomes here. I mean, if this game was played coming off the championship game, it could be a whole different conversation. Dr. Beckett, I've never really asked you, how much do you collect in football?
Same. If I get it, I keep it. You know, in fact, I will say this, when I do the dollar boxes, I go football first, because it's I follow it close enough. I don't have to worry about the prospects. You know, people pretty much emerge. And again, mainly quarterbacks, but then I'm picking in the dollar box, you're not finding great cards of quarterbacks, but you're finding great cards sometimes of linemen and other kinds of, the non-glamour positions, but there's still a following for those. So it's fun. It's fun. You'll find some really interesting stuff. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I said it's football dollar boxes are terrible.
Yeah, they are.
Stay away from this. Stay away from this.
I do all sports, Danny. So and it's fun. It's a challenge to you see a player and you know he's not. You'd know it if it's a quarterback. Even Brock Purdy. You know, if I'd seen a Brock Purdy in a dollar box, I would have picked it out. But they weren't in there because even as a Mr. Irrelevant, you know, there still probably was some speculation 6 months ago before he even got a chance.
Well, Tom Brady changed that. I think for every low drafted quarterback to the end of time, people will now hold on to it at a dollar a card. What about Travis Kelce's value? That's a name we didn't bring up on. I think he could have a little bit of a runway for price increase. As good as his career has been, if he has a big game and kind of that Jerry Rice, you know, receiver type of blowout game where it looks like he's the one that's dominated, I think you could see a little bump. But once again, he's had a good career. He's already considered the best tight end. I don't know if there's a huge runway.
Well, going back to the skills competition, what is the skill that Travis Kelce has that nobody else has? He's a combination of skills of the ideal tight end in the situation where he has the best quarterback.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's there. You know, some of that credit has to go to the system into the coach, the quarterback, the line, all that stuff. He's not bigger, faster, stronger necessarily, noticeably than anybody else. He's a really good tight end who's in a great system. So I think there's a cap to how much he can go up, even if he has 15 catches for 200 yards. Gets a temporary bump. I don't. But if he gets 200 yards, then that means Patrick Mahomes got 400 yards probably.
Yes. Good point. I think if Kelce gets a bump, it's a short term no matter what. I don't think it would carry him into a different stratosphere. Tight ends are still going to be tight ends. So on a percentage basis also, there's only going to be so much movement.
If he is regarded as the greatest, I mean, Jerry Rice is the greatest receiver of all time.
I guess that's where I was headed, yeah.
He wasn't – well, okay. And so even if Travis Kelce was the greatest tight end of all time, he'd still be below Rice.
Yeah. So. And he's probably not the greatest tight ender, but I was saying, if he has one of these games that moves him into this GOAT conversation. And the only reason I mentioned him is I think he's the only player other than the quarterbacks that could move into that greatest conversation. Is there a chance he moves into that conversation? But you're right. Tight ends just don't have a huge sex appeal, and it's going to be hard to call him the greatest ever after maybe one more game. But that'll be interesting. Logan, do you have a interest in Kansas City or Philadelphia in this one?
Well, I'm going to go as far as if I'm going to pick a team to win, it's going to be the Eagles. And it's mainly because of the Alabama connection with Jalen Hurts. You know, my wife went to Alabama, so we're Alabama fans. My brother-in-law has season tickets, so we get to go to a couple games on him every year. So we're Alabama fans. So for that reason alone, I'm going to go with the Eagles. And I'm sure John Keating's happy to hear that.
I think we're a Philadelphia heavy hobby hotline crew. So
yes.
Dr. Beckett, before we move on, thoughts, Eagles or Chiefs?
Well, I mean, I'm not a betting person. I mean, I bet in the sense of not selling things. I think they're going to go up. So it's an implicit bet. Yeah. But if I were and I were really active, then the real play here is to be moxie and go in strong this week on Jalen Hurts. If you get him before the run, I think, and expect, like Logan says, and hope that he has a great game, because his prices could double if he has a big game. He could double, and I don't know that anybody else can double. And it could be sustainably doubled if he wins big. They've been winning big all the way, you know, and it's a lot of it's him. I do think a lot of it's him. I'm just saying. So to buy him up now, people are probably already doing that. But if you were to buy him up at the beginning of the season, anything you bought at the beginning of the season, you're doing great now. You can't say the same for many other quarterbacks. Brady is stayed the same or gone down. Yep. Mahomes has not necessarily gone up. He's already in the stratosphere anyway. Brock Purdy, if you were that smart, I don't know anybody. Saban wasn't that smart.
Yeah, I haven't seen anybody's handle Purdy Collector 01 yet. Here, Logan, here's a question for you that I should probably ask you. How did you create your registry? I'd love to hear the history of PSA.
Oh, that Sophomoric Slabs showcase that I've got on the set registry right now, it's got all kinds of cards of wacky names, wacky pictures, and things like that that I've seen over the years. It kind of started, just trying to remember the card that I actually started with. It was the 52 top. Dr. Beckett helped me out.
Gus Zernial.
Yes.
Baseball's nailed to the bat. Yeah.
That's the one that started it for me. I love that card. I've always loved that card.
I'm doing my Rich Klein impersonation today.
That's good. Because I couldn't think of it there for a second. But yeah, that was the card that started all that for me. And then, you know, all these different cards with the funny names and the crazy things, I just started collecting them. And, all of a sudden I had a whole bunch of them. So I said, hey, what the heck? I'll just make a set registry showcase of them. And now I just keep adding them and adding them. So it's been a lot of fun.
Well, I've heard people mention it a lot of times, so glad we get to hear the background a little bit on that. We also just had the Hall of Fame vote. Scott Rolen went in, but I wanted to take a little bit of a different approach because I know so many people that are Hall of Fame collectors and registry people or just Hall of Fame autographs that I want to take a quick sneak peek at next year. And these are the kind of the top candidates: Beltre, Maurer, Chase Utley, David Wright. And the top returning vote getters. And, not a lot of people have been going in. Kind of your thoughts, guys. Start with you, Dr. Beckett. You see any of these guys?
I think Beltre is going to get in. And I think the Maurer, Utley, and Wright, I think the voters are going to vote more for. They're going to give Todd Helton and Billy Wagner and Andrew Jones. I think they're going to want to make – there's this idea of not whether the player is Hall of Fame worthy, but whether he's first ballot Hall of Fame worthy. And so I think those guys might eventually get in, the Joe Maurers. Joe Maurer was a great athlete, playing a tough position. So I think Helton and Wagner are going to get in. Andrew Jones – and Sheffield, maybe, but I don't think any of the new guys only. So I think it's going to be Helton, Wagner, and Beltre next year.
And Logan, I know you have a specific feeling on Gary Sheffield.
Yeah, I don't know why he keeps getting bumped down, but I've always been a Gary Sheffield fan. I'm hoping that he makes it, but something tells me he probably won't make it.
I think the writers
have to agree with Dr. Beckett.
I don't think the writers liked him, though, unfortunately.
No, based on number,
he's totally.
Well, we were also saying off air that in the batter's box, in my lifetime, he's on the short list of intimidating hitters. And I know that's not a reason to put a guy in the Hall of Fame, but Albert Bell, Gary Sheffield, there's only been a couple guys where, I was scared to see them walk into the batter's box. And Sheffield definitely had that for me.
He handled the bat like it was a toothpick, right, like it weighed 5 ounces.
Yeah, and he came up young. People forget he was a shortstop and a very athletic guy when he came up. And he's remembered, I think, a lot for his later years when he was a little bit more of a hitter first. Lou Whitaker should be a Hall of Famer. That conversation's been going on for a lot of years. I think, just as far as buying cards, Adrian Beltre, I think, is underpriced right now in general. And if you're a Hall of Fame collector or somebody, now's probably a good time to look at Beltre. Or Manny Ramirez was intimidating.
Beltre is basically not Scott Rolen on steroids, but he's who would rather have, Scott Rolen was not the player that Adrian Beltre was. So
100% agree.
So I think the fact that Rolen went in means Beltre's definitely going to go in right away.
Yeah, Beltre's a 3,000 hit guy. He's just shy of 500 homers. People forget how young he was when he made the majors to begin with and how amazing his career was to stay at the hot corner, much older than people realize, and how good the end of his career really was in Texas. I think he didn't play, in New York and those last couple of years got overshadowed. But he had a quality career most of the time.
And Roland and Beltre both were great fielders.
Oh, yeah.
At third base. And that really counts for something.
Well, I'm not going to argue that in Brooks Robinson territory. I remember Sheffield for making errors to get out of Milwaukee. Thanks, Gary. People have gotten out of Milwaukee for much better reasons. Does Alex Rodriguez have the cheapest cards in the hobby if you add in his numbers? Well, that's a loaded question. I don't know.
I disagree with that. I don't think they hate him more than Bond.
I think
that's an exaggeration, but
there's a group of people that are not on the Christmas card list.
They're both prodigies. They're the decades of their 20s. Both those guys were Hall of Famers before there was any taint. And their career numbers are spectacular.
And I'm going to throw McGuire in there. If you actually look at his numbers, they are far better than I realized in hindsight. But I do want to say that I don't like people saying all the steroids players are of equal talent, because to Dr. Beckett's point, they're not. And Sammy Sosa had a couple good years. I don't think Sammy Sosa had a Hall of Fame career. I think Bonds, A-Rod, Clemens, as much as I may not like some of the things that they did, they were Hall of Famers. And so I just want to separate that conversation, because people kind of lump them all together. Are Bonds and A-Rod's modern day Ty Cobbs? Well, I guess the implication is loose with the rules or something like that, but I think that's apples and oranges there. Bonds doesn't care what we think, and that's what fans love about him. Well, I guess like in wrestling, everybody needs a heel, so if that's your thing, go for it. But
his mentor is Willie Mays, who's another misunderstood guy that's never really, you know, so Bonds is cut out of that cloth. He's just thinking, I'm not fully appreciated, just like Willie Mays wasn't fully appreciated for all the talent and what they did on the field.
I told you I'm reading Joe Posnanski's book. He talks about the Bobby Bonds, how misunderstood he was, and that Barry absorbed a lot of that, and a lot of that was son reacting to father, which, not to get meta and emotional, but gives you a different perspective sometimes, that these are human beings that are playing a sport. These are not PR people that are coming onto a field.
Bobby Bonds would be making $40 million a year in this current sabermetric situation, where strikeouts are not a bad thing and home runs are great. That's all he did. That's all the dad did. Is they stole bases too, but he basically was hitting home runs and striking out at legendary paces for back in the day. And that was frowned upon then. Now, not so much.
I forget the number, but I thought he had the record for, was it 30-30 seasons or something, or 25-20, something like that. Bobby was a tremendous player.
But he's striking out almost 200 times a season. And that just, that's old school. That was bad.
Great show. Love watching from the UK. Well, Jamie, thank you. We love broadcasting to the UK. This is Thibault. Project shows that he does not care. He is in our face with it. Yes. Yeah, so the A-Rod and Bonds, listen, they're very controversial. Whatever your personal opinions are on the field at the beginning of their careers, they go back to when they were getting drafted, and read the draft reports and read the write-ups of them coming out of high school and college. And what you're going to see is some language in those reports that is out of this world on their talent. So that could be. John, I agree that the Mays card is still attainable.
Do you think Bonds and A-Rod, let's do Bonds, you know, is the equivalent of a WWE heel?
Well, that's what I was saying.
A wrestling heel that he wants to be talked about. He doesn't care that you don't like him, because he's acting like you wouldn't like him. So he's being talked about. And so, but I think the worst thing you can do to somebody like that is ignore him. Just like the heels in wrestling, they have to be, people have to hate him. Otherwise they lose their job.
I think it became his persona at a certain point in San Francisco. And I think, you know, maybe it was the night the commissioner, barely showed up, that Barry flipped the switch permanently and said, this is obviously who I'm going to be. Okay, Jamie, well, if this is from the UK, we'll take this topic. Should I buy Mike Trout's 2011 Topps Raw, or just pick up the PSA 9? Well, I'm going to answer that in the generic. It's hard to say without seeing the Rolf card to compare. But with a graded card, you do always know what you're getting. So, Dr. Beckett, any advice beyond that?
Well, it points out that with certain cards, 9 is better than raw. After you have 10 years of grading, you think it can't be a 10 if it's raw. If it's still sitting around raw, it may not even be a 9 if it's raw, because otherwise people would have gotten it graded.
Logan, do you buy a lot of singles, and do you buy raw or graded?
Well, for me, especially for what I collect these days, I have to buy raw to get it graded. So I'm pretty particular on the ones that I buy raw. But, you know, I have bought raw cards that, you know, they look great. You think, hey, this is going to be a 10, you know, maybe a 9 at worst. And I get it back and it's like 6. And I'm like, where did I miss something? So, you know, buying a raw card, you know, it's a more of a gamble. I mean, it's like what Dr. Beckett said, a 9 is a known quantity. So you really can't go wrong with that.
And some people are
suspicious. You have to be suspicious if you have a raw card at this day and age, unless it's came out yesterday.
Well, because so many
10 years old.
Yeah, so many people have gotten cards graded these days. The ones that are ungraded, you know, it's like you say, you have to be a little suspect of those cards. You know, are they raw for a reason?
Yeah, well, and I think the point is a lot of people pointing out certain cards are faked more than others. So, you know, do you want to take a graded 9 versus, you know, a card that has not been authenticated? And I think there you're talking almost authentication versus grading, two different things. So if you know the card is real, then you're comparing condition. But if you're not sure the card is real, you definitely want to buy the graded one. And then the question is, how does eBay allow the fake cards on the platform? According to the laws, they shall be removed. Well, they have started the authentication process. So one of the things you can do if you have concerns is make sure you're buying cards that go through the authentication process. I'm not sure the current dollar value. I know it was 300. I think it was dropped to 150. But I think eventually it's going to apply to either all their cards of a certain dollar value or anything the seller or buyer wants to go through. Gentlemen, that hour flew by. Any final thoughts on this Pro Bowl kind of deep breath weekend? I'm heading to a card show in Philly tomorrow. What are you guys up to?
I may be going to my LCS later today. It's actually sunny here. We're thawing out from the ice storm. I know Dr. Beckett down there, they had a lot of ice as well. But we're finally thawing out, so I may go to my LCS today and kind of hang out for a little bit, have some fun.
I was snowed in and iced in, and I was forced to sort cards.
Oh, that's terrible. I know you like the sort cards.
I want to see a picture out the window. I want to see what that weather really is.
It's melted now.
Yeah, exactly.
Monday through, it started melting yesterday.
Tuesday night, join us on Hobby Hotline. Host will be Drew, Cousin Oz, and Erica. Fantastic. And real quick, only because I love your Johnny, you in the background. Did you pick up the Eddie Murray? No. I said this right before we went on air. I missed the Eddie Murray release, and I do accept donations. But on that note, we'll head out. And I want to thank everybody for joining us today. And we will see you Tuesday night and next Saturday on Bench Clear.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.